I want to try to finish the little section on the relationship on religion and morality. This is the third time I've put this quotation on the board from Thomas O'Day, and I just want to finish up that topic. And then that'll be the first part of our time together, and then absolutely no later than 9:30 we will go to the debate between Grant and Gilkey, and that's the next topic on the sheet, namely the question of what qualities make the truly moral. At 10:45, the discussion on lest innocent blood be shed, and another session on embodiment. 9 o'clock this Friday is going to be another session on ethics. Dan and I have traded Fridays. So there will be a session on ethics this Friday, and then Dan will do biblical studies starting Thursday this week and then continuing with two sessions next week. And then early next week, we'll have a discussion in the evening open to the full community on the book, The Color Purple. So if you want to get in on that discussion, and that'll be Monday night, okay, The Color Purple. Let me just read through this. I don't know if all of you can see a definition of sorts of religion. Religion is a dimension of human consciousness concerned with three things: our ultimate relation to our world and the forces and elements constitutive of it. Secondly, the meaning that we find or attribute to our life experiences and activities. And thirdly, the direction we give our efforts and aspirations. Ultimate relation to the world, the meaning we give our experiences, and the direction for our lives. Now, there isn't, I don't think, lots of time to discuss this, but I do want to open today's session and kind of tie some things together from last time with simply a statement, my own statement, about what religion is, how it functions, essentially, and morality and the tie between them. I think religion does function, whether it's Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, quasi-religious movements like Marxism or humanism. I think that they do function so as to give meaning in life, and do that by a kind of binding and bonding of the ordinary and the partial that we experience to something more cosmic. Religion functions in such a way as to pick up the transient and partial and fragmentary meanings in our lives, and that's the kind we have in our experience, and it bonds those things to something which has other qualities. Something more enduring. It bonds and binds that which is partial to that which is whole. It bonds and binds that which is transient and fragmentary to that which is regarded as more enduring and cosmic and eternal. In doing so, religion provides an astounding security. It's been the testimony of many people, Nietzsche or Viktor Frankl from the concentration camps, that people with a why in their lives can endure almost any how or what. The cross, to use a Christian symbol, can be endured if one feels that it is part of God's kingdom. It is an astounding security that religion provides. The same dynamic of this kind of, for lack of a better phrase, cosmic binding or bonding of our partial, fragmentary, ordinary experience explains why religion is both terrifically conservative sometimes and enormously revolutionary at other times. I don't know if that's puzzled you. It has puzzled me. The religion becomes the way in which you, it becomes the most conservative force, human force, that you find in many circumstances. And in other circumstances, it has the potential to underwrite the most thorough and radical changes. And I'm saying it's the same dynamics that are the clue to that. That is, if it's this kind of cosmic binding and bonding, then you don't mess with patterns that are bound to those kind of cosmic foundations. That's a conservative element. At the same time, people and movements have unbounded and energy for change and transformation if we're convinced that the new human creation is God's very own. If you think that your partial fragmentary change is part of God's creation, then that is a source of tremendous energy for transformation. If you think that history is on your side, then that is a source for great change. Whether it's Calvinism or Islam or Marxism, it's always had that kind of, those are examples of that kind of religious underwriting of radical change. So that for the same reasons, then, religion is either terrifically conservative or the source of the deepest kind of change and alteration.
And can be at the same time.
It can be at the same time, yeah. Given the nature of religious dynamics, I would expect then to see both the greatest moral good and the greatest moral evil to be religious. I would see the extremes of good and evil to be extremes which were really religiously grounded because of the character, the function of religion. I have great, this is an aside, I have great sympathy with my academic colleagues who argue that humanity would fare better without religion. And would fare better with the achievement of genuine secularity, meaning that we should simply recognize that all meanings, all of our acts, are simply partial, transient, fragmentary. That's the way life is. And we shouldn't always be trying to bind them to something which is whole, enduring, cosmic. We should just accept the partial, fragmentary quality and character of our existence. So my colleagues argue that we would be better off if we did that, that we would be secular and not religious. My response is that the fruits of secularity are precious ones, but that at least thus far, true secularity doesn't belong to the human species. we are incurably religious, and then we have an argument a little bit about that, but it usually ends up that they also bind their experience to some grander pattern of things, some larger meaning. They won't let it rest with its character as partial and unfulfilled. So thus far, people, I think, are kind of hopelessly religious. And the best we can do is ask for a critical religion that fosters the kind of morality that we do desire for all. I think that Gilkey, and he's following Paul Tillich, doesn't quite explain enough by calling religion our ultimate concern or our ultimate commitment, is that which is religious. It's probably true, as Peter Berger says, that at the end of every act dangles a world view. I think that's right. And it's probably true as well that every worldview is invariably given some kind of religious sanction or grounded religiously. I think that's probably right. But I think that Gyokyen Chantum Kampan probably attributes more coherence to our lives than we experience. I'm not sure that our morality is always a kind of direct spin-off of an ultimate commitment and loyalty and concern that is always there at center, and that every act reflects that kind of central. I'm just not so sure that we're that coherent. It may be there, and I think Gyokyi would say it's probably only partially conscious to us, but it's real. My own view is that instead of there being some sort of clear center in our lives that is religious, to which all behavior then relates, and that center has some sort of cosmic grounding, sometimes plain to us, sometimes not. I think rather we live with more just some sort of cosmic sense about things, sometimes clear to us, sometimes not, to which our ordinary and our extraordinary behavior is related. But I'm not sure it's quite as coherently so as Gyokyi says is the case in Chantum Kampan. With Ian Barber, I think there is a human drive toward unity, there is a human drive toward wholeness, there is a human drive toward coherence, there is a human drive that presses for some overarching meaning for all the partial meanings, and that religion's role is to provide that big meaning for all those little ones. I think there is that human drive. I just rather doubt that it's as centralized a system as Gyokyi presents. I do think with Gyokyi that we're as religious as he says we are. That's just all a random kind of comment on what O'Day expresses in other terms, that religion has to do with our ultimate relationship to our world and its forces, that it provides meaning for our lives, and that it does give some direction for our behavior. That's how religion functions. A couple words on morality, and then the relationship between the two. We talked last time about the social functioning of morality, and I shared with you some opinions, reefs, little and twists, that morality is a social and cultural system for guiding human character and conduct so as to make cooperative living possible. That's what morality does. Incidentally, I wish my parents had told me that. I remember arguments, many arguments from my childhood, when my parents would tell me I should do something or I shouldn't do something, and I would ask them why. And they would usually say because it's right or because it's wrong, which which was an unsatisfactory answer to a child. Why is it right? Or why is it wrong? And eventually, I can remember the pastor in catechism class telling us what we ought or ought not to do, often not being tyrannical. I mean, it wasn't just moral. It wasn't moral propaganda. It came out of good discussions, why we should do this and why we shouldn't do this. But eventually, he would end up saying, because it's right or wrong in God's eyes, or something like that. Or my parents would say, because it's right or because it's wrong. And I would ask, why is telling the truth right and lying wrong? And why is it wrong to lie? And why is it right to tell the truth? And eventually you get an answer, just because. Just because it is. And that was not satisfactory. I can remember being very frustrated with that reply, but not being able to take it any further than that and not getting help from anybody. I wish they had told me.
Did you tell Andy?
Well, we have discussions about it. Yeah, I mean, when I haven't had lots of those kinds of questions, but But I do give a different answer than just because. Or God says it so, or it's right in God's eyes. And it may seem common sense to you all, but I wish my parents had said that it's a requirement for living together. I mean, that's what morality is about. And I wish they had just told me that, and then we could have discussed what are the requirements for living together. And therefore, truth-telling or lying or any number of other things. It's not far from, even though it sounds at the first, in the first place disconnected, it's not far from the biblical understanding of to create. To create is to fashion order and community always out of threatening chaos, or from the elements of what otherwise would be chaos. And morality functions in that creative way. Our lives are always at the edge of coming apart, and they're often invaded by chaos, and morality functions so as to make living together possible. The society floats on a sea of morality. But I think when Little and Twist talk about morality in that way, they obscure the divisiveness. And when Reef talks about culture that way, obscure the divisiveness and the sources of uncooperation in morality. They do that by talking about society and culture as if those were things that were whole. And they're not. It's better to say that morality guides conduct, character and conduct, so as to make group cooperative living possible, by providing a system of shared expectations. Sometimes restraints, no, you shouldn't do this. Sometimes permissions, you may. Sometimes straight obligations, you should. But it's better to say groups and not society. Because the morality of one group, even of a society or whole culture, often sets it against another group. Morality is not nearly the peacemaking enterprise that it sounds like when you listen to Reef or Little and Twist when they talk about it's what makes human living together possible. That's true, but you must think of it not as also the source of much divisiveness between groups because they have conflicting moralities. Now, I want to add one thing. There's a difference, in my view, or really a supplement to this notion of what morality is and does. I would give more attention than do the folks that we've cited to the psychic and not just the social need for morality. In a good book, and I neglected to have Mary order it, but you might want to know it, Donald Evans, Struggle and Fulfillment. In Struggle and Fulfillment, which is a look at how people develop, moral and religious development, but in a wider framework of human development in general. In Struggle and Fulfillment, Evans, like following Eric Erickson's work and that of others, contends that we all have an inner drive to become, and there are identifiable stages in our development. And I think that morality roots, and religion too, roots as much in that inner drive to become as it does in the need to achieve necessary social regulation of behavior. Little and Twist, Reef, all talk about morality being that which makes our human life together possible. It's a social necessity. I think there's a psychic necessity for it as well. And here the link of religion and morality is a very intimate one. It's not just morality a la Little and Twist giving direction for behavior and religion giving meaning to life. Rather, both religion and morality spring from the same peculiar human desire to finish the world, to complete ourselves and to complete the world. In other words, to create. To find a meaningful place in creation and a place that is ours. To fashion culture and character is a human impulse. It's probably not shared by other animals. I don't think we're in a good position to say. But I think it's very clear that we are unfinished animals. And we are just irrepressibly creative. And we are just bound to finish ourselves and finish our world. We never get it done, but we always keep doing that, trying to do that. We're unfinished animals for whom the world is not simply there or here as a matter of sheer fate. We won't accept it on those terms. And I think we'd get morality as part of the shaping of culture and character whether or not it served a social function of making society possible. I think it's an inner, part of an inner drive because of our unfinished character. Whether it served cooperation or didn't serve cooperation, we'd still be trying to regulate human conduct and shape human character. Final item, and then it's 9:30, so we have to do something else. I think what Gilkey says in Shantung Compound is meaningful. He says there that morality is one's religion enacted in social existence. But I do think that tends to make morality a spin-off of religion, and religion as prior or more basic than morality. Whereas I see both morality and religion as expressive of human nature, and that nature is human nature, and the human world is unfinished and all in need of cosmic meaning and some kind of social coherence. I agree with Gilkey that the relationship of religion and morality is intimate. I'm not sure that it's quite the way. I think it's more complex than his simply saying morality is an essence, a kind of spin-off of one's religion in social existence. Okay, finally, I think religion and Christian faith and morality exhibit all of the dynamics that I've described. What all of this fails to do, however, is point up the varieties of religious experience and the varieties of moral experience and the great range of choices among religious experiences and varieties of moral experience. To say that Christianity, or you can substitute something else, Judaism or Islam or Buddhism or quasi-religious moral traditions such as Marxism or humanism, to say these things about them doesn't tell us what we most want to know. To say that Christianity has, as a matter of history, sanctioned both the static order, because it has a religion, so it has a terrifically conservative impulse, such as sanctioning the feudal order, to cite one example, to say that it's also provided cosmic ratification for terrific social change, first century Christianity, liberation theology today, to say that it has given elaborate moral guidance and direction and for centuries and thousands of places, and will continue to do so as long as it's around, all of this doesn't yet tell us what we most want to know, is to recognize its character as religion and morality. What we most want to know is what shall we make of the choices possible among the varieties of religious experience and moral experience. And what precisely will we commend for our world and for the people that we desire to be? I think it's helpful to describe how religion and morality function. I don't think that descriptive task is satisfying. We must go on to assess and to commend. Of the many, many possibilities of concrete religious and moral configurations, what shall we choose? And on what grounds will we make those choices? That's the question that I think we need to pose. And that's to move in to the next sessions, which are on those possible choices on the grounds and choosing among them. Without intruding upon your worship at Holden, whether together here in Vespers or celebration of the Eucharist or your own private worship, I do hope sometime that you will also step back from that, observe it, and see what's going on there in terms of how religion and morality function. The celebration of Eucharist is a good place to do that. Watch how, listen how, observe how, when we gather for that, it is so religious. That is, it picks up people's puzzles, problems, joys, pains, all the things of their lives, and sets them into some overarching meaning. God cares, God hears, God shares, dies with and for you. And this common food that you eat every day next door and this common drink symbolizes that your own life is also God's life, and that God's body and blood has been broken and shed for you. So mystery, suffering, ecstasy, doubt, your joys, your goals, they're all bonded to some transcending reality. The forms vary immensely, but this is what religion does, and that transcending reality is also an intimate one. It's what we're doing in matins many a morning. That may also be moral, and you ought to watch, listen for that as we worship, or reflect upon your own worship. As soon as all of this bears on how you conduct yourselves toward others, how you relate to the world in terms of the kinds of persons that you want to be or others to be, and the kinds of actions that you ought to take in keeping with this overarching meaning. As soon as you've done that, you've moved from the religious dimensions into the moral dimensions, which are so intimately related, the direction we give our efforts and our aspirations. Okay, let's just simply stop with that. And we gotta discuss now not how morality functions. The question now is, what quality makes something moral or immoral? Not distinguishing the moral from the non-moral now, and how does the morality function, but what quality makes something moral or immoral? That's what Grant and Gilkey are debating in part in this case of the famous case of the American Red Cross parcels. What I want us to do is to divide into two groups, and using Grant and Gilkey, make your statement through their positions of what you regard as that quality which makes something moral or immoral. Take a side, either Grant's or Gilkey's. You can choose which side you agree with, and you will start there. If you find yourself being persuaded by the other side, and you feel that it's at least a good enough case that you want to go over to the other side and try it on for a bit, and argue that other side, then just get up and walk over to the other side. And if you were Gilkey, then become Grant for a while. If you were Grant, become Gilkey for a while. your life doesn't depend on this. I mean, you can just do it because there was something there that sounded like it was worth looking into and arguing from that side. Then after we've debated it for a while, then we'll reconvene as a kind of committee of the whole and assess not those two positions, but whether there's something right and something wrong in each, and whether you can put them together in some more comprehensive understanding of the moral. Okay, let's really make this a debate and have people face each other across the fireplace this way. So the people who agree with Gilkey over on this side, and the people who agree with Grant over on this side, and just allow a couple of chairs there between. Gilkey over here, Grant over here. Again, that's at least to start with, and if you change your mind, you change your mind. Well, that's what we're going to reconvene for. To see if there is an alternative.
Fun to be
religious
and self-righteous.
The religion conservatives are over there.
Yes.
Or here.
So we're a
minority. Okay. The moral one.
That's the right one.
That's my point. Why is it so? What makes it so?
Just because.
Just because.
There's more of us.
Right.
They're Americans.
It's a majority view. That's what makes it so. Whole systems have been built on that. Democracy is supposed to be a function of that, right? Is that all you have to say? Yeah. It's all right if you peek. You can look at your own text.
What makes your side
moral?
Yeah.
That's
the
way to report it.
Another retort.
Don't make our side moral.
Because they're immoral.
This isn't getting any further than my childhood.
That's why we're a lot more like
very awesome. Maybe it'd be helpful for someone just to kind of summarize each stand and then want
that
something more.
All right. Yes. Can you want to start that, Jean? If you do, I'll start.
I'm not clear. That's why I'm asking for the clarification.
I see.
So
all right. Someone over there state what you regard as Gilkey's position in a nutshell.
It doesn't have to be clear, you just have
to state it.
Go for it, Holly.
Okay. I think our position is that when we consider who's going to benefit and the good of the community, then we think it would make more sense for the parcels to be spread out among everybody, because everybody's suffering equally. And so our concern is more for that things should be distributed on the basis of need rather than on what we deserve or where they came from. So I think our concern is for the good of the community. What do you think?
That sounds good.
But it's a requirement for living together.
Yeah.
I see.
We didn't do that the first time.
Why didn't you do that the first time? This is the second group of parcels.
Yeah. Well, see, there's more. We have
there
more.
Were just many.
In this case, it's a more clear-cut case because there is enough for everyone.
And these aren't.
It's moral because you're addressing human, objective human need. Is that what you're saying?
And isn't there also part of that argument that says it's okay for higher structures to be able to kind of influence those decisions or even make those decisions, whereas yours is it has to come out individual?
If I read this right, you're saying that it's moral because of the consequences. You ask what are objective human needs, and whatever fulfills them by whatever means is required, is all right.
Well, not by
so even if it's the enemy, even if it's the enemy by force.
No, we didn't say by any means, did we?
Yeah,
but, I don't agree with that.
But what you are supporting, it seems...
No, the concept of guilt, he says. No. I agree with guilt.
What do you mean the enemy by force? It was
even if the Japanese do it.
The Japanese from the hierarchy come down and do the decision that somehow he even said a divine something came through that. I remember he said that in the book.
It seems that Gilkey's position, your position, is that law, that it is by whatever means, because you are coercing people to give up their packages. That's okay. The means are justified by the ends. The law does have the ability to be moral over and above an individual's conscience, an individual's choice.
Now, there's maybe a narrow nationalism at work in this whole issue that we as Gilkey are beginning to realize that we didn't see in the first distribution of parcels, I think, maybe. That, I mean, we keep being shocked that the Americans are being so, and we being an American, Gilkey's one of the mass, that it's almost like the concept of ownership on the basis of nationality is beginning to be a little bit questioned by us, especially as the needs of everybody in the community, the longer we've been there, are getting more sharp to all of us, and that there's a real danger of our cohesion falling apart, and that we need to if we're going to all survive, we need to hang together and not become adversaries of one another, and that's what this.
See, we don't argue though that it's not right that the Americans give away their packages. It's rather how we are to give them away. Whether it's right that we are told to give them away and somehow that's moral, or whether individuals, that morality comes about through individual choice. It comes through an interaction between individuals, but not direct. Morality can't be, I guess I see our basic stand as saying that morality can't be directed through law.
We question the presupposition that there are packages to begin with, I think. I mean, you're saying your question is whether or not someone should force you to give away your packages, or whether you have the right to decide to give away your packages.
No.
At least part of our argument is that they may not be our packages to begin with, and it doesn't trouble me that the Japanese didn't tell me distribute the packages because they're not ours to begin with.
Well, but Gilkey's was, I mean, Gilkey clearly says they're American Red Cross.
Yeah. He wasn't a covering measure. In the previous case, they had been a covering measure as to who was to get them. That's what I don't say.
But
they are American Red Cross parcels.
Saying even though the name American is on them, kind of in another level, who's ultimately are they? You know, it's food and people have a need. So is it really ours or is it everybody's that has a need?
But even with that, I think that's an important question. We're glad to entertain it. but I think that even apart from that question, you can't. A true moral quality is such that it can't be forced. If something, in order to be moral, has to be chosen.
So you would rather be moral
to be,
than just.
Something has to come from inside me. I must be able to choose. Morality doesn't make any sense apart from choice.
Then you would let people starve.
You're being, I think.
And that would be moral.
We never said they weren't going to give you the package.
Right. We just said you were
going to know, but your end result would be that you chose to.
Listen, as we celebrate Reformation Day, you all ought to learn something from Martin Luther. genuine morality is that which flows from the person out of gratitude for the gift of life. If it may be that some things require coercion, that may be, and God may need to have instruments of coercion, but that's not true morality. True morality is something that issues out of people's voluntary choices, and they learn responsibility by making decisions and living with the consequences of them. They make them in interaction
for
with
other people
one another.
The consequences in this case. Yeah.
Because you've decided that you want to have the choice of deciding to share the packages, because that's free moral choice. But then when you got down to the specifics of it, you were going to keep more of them for the Americans than for other people.
No, that's
so then you have to ask what's free morality.
You yourself said that maybe people will keep
following. No, see, he said in your position that the force is a quality which is a part of morality.
It isn't, but
I don't know
in this case, well, the reason I'm here, although it might not be a good reason, is that I really care less about morality. I want justice.
Amen.
And what you're dealing with, Larry, is that you're saying, okay, if I was
that's
the
because
Grant,
justice is morality.
If I was part of the Grant camp, then I would say, oh, well, okay, I'll give away, you know, I'll be moral and I'll give away some of my packages or all of them. But the fact is that Americans aren't moral. And they wouldn't give them away. There's no way that those Americans were going to give away six. And if I was in the same situation, I probably would. So I guess the reason I'm here is because I recognize that there is no, if you give people free choice in this situation, it's not going to work. And I would rather let everyone have one than watch everyone starve. And, you know, maybe I'd give away six, maybe I'd only give away one. But I'd rather have justice than morality in this case.
Taking the note, Larry's point of your artificial distinction between justice and morality, yeah, we seem to have a problem here of what, Marilyn is her point, or the question then, if we don't have consensus, which we obviously don't seem to have, then who decides what is justice, and do you employ force in carrying that out? And that's the point we're raising for you.
Okay, I guess it sounded like Larry was saying that Gilkey was saying that force ought to be used in the distribution of the packages. Right?
Gilkey was saying that whatever is required for meeting objective human need, meeting that end, that goal, which is a just goal, a just end, whatever means are required, there are moral. And I'm saying, we're saying, no, that one of the real telling quality of what is moral is the ability to have a say, is choice, is that it comes from my inner being, that I learn responsibility by having to make choices and not having others make for them. If I were black, if I were Native American, if I were a woman, I would not be over on your side, I'd be over here, because I would not want someone saying, we know what the greatest good for the greatest number is, and whatever means are required to see that happen is fine, that you blacks, you women, you Native Americans don't get to choose or say or have make those decisions yourself is too bad. It's meeting objective human need for the vast majority that's moral.
You're putting it in universal terms, and I thought we were arguing this particular case, and that's why I'm here, is because of this particular case.
Well,
if you want to put it in universal terms of what morality is, then I would go to Grant. But not in this case.
No, I'm saying what is... I think you want a double standard. I think you want to decide one case, one situation here, and then decide what morality is, and it's different than another case. No, we do want things which...
Well, it's obvious that no one was going to be moral in this situation.
Was
if nobody was moral, how would you expect that justice could be enacted in a corporate sense, because there'd have to be some element of morality.
Was there corporate justice in this?
Well, how do you define justice without devoid of morality?
Or devoid of individuals.
The person who was moral,
I don't
sense, Japanese
was
moral
with
person.
The Japanese leader.
Yeah.
He was the moral person. He had some objectivity. But there was no morality within there was not a consistent level of morality within the American ranks.
Well, I wonder how much you also are assuming that we know what the outcome is, i.e. that we'll be released in 2 years or so. You all seem to be saying that there's plenty to go around, if we all share these packages equally, everybody will do just fine, we'll all live happily ever after. But maybe we should think about lifeboat ethics. I mean, maybe we should think about, we don't know how long we're going to last. There's a possibility there.
The choice is very important, and I think that in fact Gilkey and the people that he was, you know, there were a bunch of them who were going out to talk to different Americans to really see if the Americans were willing to share or were not willing to share. And to their chagrin, they found out that most of them did not want the parcels shared. So they were becoming confronted that there was not consensus, and disturbed by that, and wondering if some kind of, I don't know if he thought of it as creative confrontation, would get at the root and maybe challenge people to reconsider their narrow-mindedness. It seemed that what really the Grant position was under the guise of advocating choice, and that's where true morality comes. It was just a way to camouflage their own desire to limit the choices for themselves so that they could get the goodies. The choice is important, but I think that they were using the choice in a way that didn't lead to morality. So I think it's too simple to say that free choice equals morality. People can choose a very immoral or unwhole reaction to an event. So I like the basis of Grant position, but it didn't add up to a moral choice.
No, that's your reading. I want you to take a close look at this text. Look at your interpretation of Grant's action. Your interpretation is that, namely, moral action is to be understood as the means by which an individual becomes good. And you keep saying that because I want a voice in the distribution of these parcels, that is simply a reason, that is simply me wanting to become, as you say, holier by means.
Yeah, but it seems
that.
Like...
And there is nothing in what I said as Grant which gives grounds for that interpretation.
It seems like it's a limited voice, though. I guess that's what I see, is to say, you know, like, okay, let's get the whole community together and let's have all the voice be able to be included and to have an equal voice. But they're saying that only the Americans are the only ones that can have the voice and be able to decide how the goods are going to be distributed. And that's where I see that the immorality and the injustice comes in.
For their moral growth, the growth of the Americans' morality, but it doesn't look at the moral question as it affects everybody else.
Oh, well, if you're saying that everyone ought to get in on the discussion, and then back and forth and back and forth about what is the proper distribution of the parcels and how should that be accomplished, and then everyone freely has a say in that, I'm all for that. That is my position. I resent the fact that you, Gilkey, read it in terms of becoming individually virtuous and a way of camouflaging my desire to keep more of the parcels myself. No, you just, if you're going to do it that way, that's not your position. Your position is that the objective human need determines what is morally right, what Kirk calls justice instead of morality.
Could you
that whatever is required, including the hard arm of coercion to achieve that, yes, he does.
Wait, can I?
He's grateful that if the Japanese would take it.
Could you also look at Gilkey's position of saying that just because the Americans are so involved and the people are so involved in their own struggle to survive, that they don't have the objectivity to be able to look at the overall picture to make choices? Whereas he was saying that the other commander was able to look back in a more objective viewpoint and be able to see the overall need and to be able to make judgments out of something other than sort of just that basic struggle to survive.
That's what you got to argue. I'm arguing for everybody talking about it in the compound together, Americans, non-Americans, and freely choosing together.
That's not Grant's position.
That wasn't Grant's position. It was that the Americans should get to decide.
Yeah, that was Grant's.
That was Grant's.
Then I got a little bit of the other.
But I'm not over there either.
Yeah,
you'll be talking all
the time. I'm sorry, in the middle.
I'm going to shut up for a while.
I think they're all innocent because they had original sin.
But now, taking this into a different situation, and this is the one, this is, I guess, what made me come over to Grant, or not be in the middle yet, is where does the individual, if objective human needs is the basis for morality, coercion is moral to achieve those, where does the individual stand in respect to that? For instance, the thing that I was thinking about in the shower this morning was the letter from the Birmingham letter from Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King and Thoreau's On Civil Disobedience, where he talks about law being moral only insofar as it does not clash with individual conscience in connection with some other basis for morality, for Martin Luther King, mainly Christ or God. Now, to me, the individual has the choice to, morally, to disobey the law. And the law, it seems to me that at least this standoff is that issue, is whether whether morality is based in choice or if morality is based in something which seems to me apart from individuals.
Yeah, but see, that's why the middle position is good, because we're saying that we need the choice, but not only by a selected few people.
It has to,
we don't take the coercion either, but that it has to be choice, but by an equal representation.
And I think there's another value here beyond the objective. I disagree with Grant saying that Gilkey's position comes out of an objective human situation. I think Gilkey's position comes out of a recognition that the neighbor's need, the other person's need for a choice, is greater or as great as my own need for choice. It's not just an objective human situation that he sees everybody in the camp equally suffering, but it is the tension between self-interest and the neighbor's need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Christian position, I think,
mm-hmm.
as Gilkey sees it, is that the neighbor's need is as great as my own need.
Right, but I think that Grant says that he believes the right thing to do is to distribute the parcels.
No,
yes,
no,
he does.
He said there'll probably be a five.
No, he said he asked what he thought would be the result. He said, I would imagine most people would give away
two.
But now that he doesn't, he says he doesn't say that that's okay or right.
But
he says that's what he expects will happen.
So that's still not just.
It's not just.
What about you say that if you're talking about need? What is the most important need here? Is it to have the food divided equally, or is it the need to make the choice?
The need for Americans to make a choice.
Yeah.
Well, anybody can make a choice, but we should all have a
choice.
Choice
at all.
Yeah. Right.
Neighbors that
the moral thing to do is to feed everybody equally. I'm
right.
saying, is that the ultimate need here? Is it, or is it more important need to make that choice, to have as Grant would say, that we should give the right to make a choice.
I think that it's not only the fact that the neighbors are in need equally to the Americans, but it's also the question of whether my good as an whether in making an individual choice, I am really choosing what is good for me if I take Grant's position. Because I see that my individual need is not only as an individual, but is also a part of the community, and that the community's health is directly related to my own health as an individual. So therefore, in this situation, I must make a choice which benefits the whole community, not just my own self as an individual.
You're not making a choice with
especially
Gilkey.
On that side, yeah.
You're not making a choice at all.
Are you saying that this
she's making a choice for a whole, not for herself?
Yeah. And I'm saying that my...
And as a Christian, she thinks that's what the gospel talks
right.
about.
But I thought Gilkey said the outward act
even whatever it expresses. I mean, you determine, he wants you to put your need on a par with other people's needs, right, and vice versa.
Right.
Morality and ethics is a matter of relations in community.
Right.
I also thought he went on to say, however, that it was the outward act that that is the real test of what's moral. That is, if everybody's hungry, then everybody gets food. Even if the medium for accomplishing that is, in this case, the impersonal arm of government, and even if that were force on members. I mean, is there any qualification to means and how you arrive at that?
Yes, because the reason that the Japanese government now has to make the decision is because the Americans made the prior decision to stop the equal distribution of the packages to everyone. I mean, with the choice that the Americans made was to turn over the decision to the Japanese government because they could not make a choice for the whole community. That's the reason we're in this position right now.
Yeah.
This is a classical schizophrenic example of ethics. It's one group looking at the ends justifying the means, and the other group saying the means are all important. And they're really neither Gilkey nor Grant are integrating the two.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's real typical in Western decision, in the way we've been thought to make the decision.
Yeah.
It seems to me, though, that it's not... Oh, I'm sorry, Spence.
I just wanted... The reason I can't find myself in either one is because both positions presuppose an understanding of property, which I don't share. They both presuppose a position of property wherein the Americans either decide that they will allow the property to be equal to Cindy, or the Americans decide that they will decide how it's going to happen. But both of them presuppose that it's American Red Cross goods. And
what do you mean by presuppose? Is it not?
Yeah, I know. But so what you're saying is, yes, we do own them, and we will make a decision that I'm not saying you do. I'm just saying this is Gilkey's. If you're sitting there, this is what I think that position means. But they recognize when those packages come in that those are American goods, but the greatest good would be to distribute them equally, and so therefore we will be the instruments of decision on how those get.
I don't know if Gilkey is there because he wants to be, or if that's just the reality of what 199 other Americans feel about American Red Cross packages. And I think part of morality or justice is working within the parameters of, well, I want to, I'm going to cut my throat here maybe, but he recognizes what everyone else is thinking and wants to work to obtain justice, and that is how he sees that it has to happen. Is that okay? Everyone else is recognizing that this is property. How can we distribute it so it doesn't become property of just
such a I think that.
I think the issue of coercion only comes up because the Americans had the presupposition that it was their goods, because I think it was just as appropriate for the Japanese to decide in the first place as for the Americans to decide, because those things weren't marked in the first place.
I think that the question, though, exists outside of the particular of even who the packages belong to, because so you decide as a whole, as a community, you know, you vote, whatever, assuming that nobody owns the packages but the community, how they're going to be distributed, and some still disagree. You're still faced with the question of, do you coerce those people? Is it moral because the majority of people agreed on that?
We're not asking for a vote, we're asking for a meeting. Trying to
Are we talking that. About consensus?
Yeah, but see, this is why I'm still closer to this side, because I don't think consensus involves a credible process, and I just don't see in the situation that the camp is in that that's a reality.
Yeah.
I agree that if you get past the question of ownership and say we've just, you know, for some reason we've decided these are the packages. Nobody owns them. There's no question. They're commonly owned. How are we going to distribute them? Then I think you've got to. This is where the individual's opportunity for expressing her or his opinion comes in. But at the end result, you're probably not going to have consensus as a reality, and therefore force will be.
Well, that I guess that's what I'm saying is I think there's a question that's much more interesting than simply dwelling on possession, and that is whether, you know, whether if the majority decides something, whether it's moral or not, or if morality is found through individual choice.
It seems to me, Seth, that have taken it too. You've wanted to look back as an outside observer to the situation and say, it's not a reality that consensus was possible, but then maintain within that community the idea of decision making. I mean, one way you've said, okay, this is the way it is, and the other way you've said, well, I don't like the idea of property that they were holding, so since I don't hold that here as a 1983 observer, I would be in a different place.
Well, let me just put it this way. I know it says, and I doubt if this is the way I would act. I would like to hope that I'd be able to think through some of this. But say I am an American in the camp. The packages arrive. I would like to be able to say I recognize those packages as property of the community, not my own. I'd like to hear how the community wants to resolve this issue. I will be part of that process, but I reserve the right that if the community decides something that I cannot morally agree with, then I will suffer the consequences, but also maintain the right to not necessarily follow. I don't know what that would mean in this case because I've given up any right to the packages, but to
it almost becomes a moral choice, or you can give your package away. That's also an
injury. All I guess I'm saying is I don't want to giving up any claim to the packages and agreeing to be part of the process, I'm not necessarily saying I will agree with the end result, but I agree to be part of the process.
Can I ask, the parcels and the question of property is certainly important. I think many people think because it's American Red Cross, that's a international part of an international organization, therefore they ought to be regarded as such. Let's pose it differently to Gilkey and Mr. Grant. If the packages came from your families and were directed to you in the camp, so it was addressed to Gilkey or was addressed to Grant, let's scale the number down, but the objective human need is the same. I mean, this winter has been a hard winter. People are hungry. Now, should you, Gilkey, take the packages that have come from your parents and your aunts and uncles and regard them as everybody's property and therefore the whole group makes the choice? Or, that's one possibility. The second possibility is that turn over to the Japanese government because you know that they may be more objective than you are, and what really counts is that objective human need is met. That's the second possibility. Third possibility is that you, Gilkey, will decide on the packages that your family has sent to you after looking at the conditions of the camp. Now, Grant is saying that you, Gilkey, probably are the quality which is most moral is for you to make that decision with those packages. And I think you're arguing that that the Japanese ought to.
No.
What would you do? How would you regard those packages that came from your parents and addressed to you, and the conditions of the camp, and how would you regard them, and what should be the way in which they should? What is the morality of the distribution?
I think it would be moral to distribute. And the reason I wouldn't agree with Grant because
but
Grant,
would you choose that?
Do you choose
moral because you chose?
No, the reason I wouldn't agree with Grant is because he would say that as long as I make an individual choice whether to share or whether not to share, it was a moral choice.
No, not
at all.
He never said that.
He just says that morality can't exist apart from choice.
I've made a voluntary choice not to share or to share. He might disagree with my decision not to share, but he would say that morality existed because I made a choice.
No.
He would approach it the other way. Morality could not exist without the choice.
Yeah.
That might be your position, but I'm not convinced yet that that really was what Grant was saying.
I don't
say
think that's what Grant was saying.
It almost sounds like you're being more, you may be being more generous to his position. I'd have to reread it to try and decide what, where I thought Grant was.
Well, you have
and
to,
we're all looking
there,
at
there, you've got to be a little suspicious.
Because this is
it's
through Gilkey's eyes.
Those folks are the ones that are interpreting these.
Yeah.
But it also sounds, too, like Gilkey has coded the argument such that there's a higher degree of morality to a corporate desperation than there is to an individual greed.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think he'd agree with that.
Say that again.
Yeah.
it sounds his whole argument is his imagery and his words make the reader think that there is a higher morality to a corporate desperation or a corporate greed than there is to an individual one.
I don't trust him at all. This is what he describes when he describes him as how I like that rabid of people, anti-papist branch who espouses good. It sounds pretty insulting. And I sort of not trust everything he says about what Grant said.
Yeah, he's really called Grant's
argument. I want to ask Kirk something though, and that is, you said that you thought it was moral to distribute the packages. Now, do you think that it would be moral that you distributed the packages, you made the decision to distribute your packages, or that you all gathered all your packages together and then distributed them from that pool? So everybody had to give their packages to some pool and then it would be distributed from that.
Well, what's really more the issues here is the Japanese confiscated your package when it came in and decided that.
Only if the group by consensus gave that legitimate authority to the Japanese, so they're not going to take it. They're going to assume that it's the Americans' property.
Right. I mean, the packages is going to go to you. Now, are you going to say, give your packages out, or are you going to insist that everybody give all their packages into a pool and then we all distribute it from there?
I think there's another alternative here.
Well, I'm asking Kirk this question right now.
Okay, let's finish Kirk's reply, and then I want to go to the question of whether we together have a notion of what is moral that gathers up what we regard as the strength of both positions but avoids the pitfall.
I guess I would hope that I would just distribute my packages.
That's where I see Grant, what Grant is saying.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
That's the method. But that's not the situation.
But see, I would hope that I would do that. But I will recognize that won't be the universal response of Americans.
That's exactly what Grant does it too.
Right.
But
and I can't control somebody else's morality.
Recognizing that and seeing the corporate as more important than the individual, I want to be with Gilkey because in Gilkey's way, everyone will get one.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and where I would say is that I am under the understanding that I can't legislate or I cannot control other people's morality. I can't make
them. That's where I say
make
I could care
moral.
Less about their morality. I want everybody to eat.
Yeah, but that's still a matter of morality.
Yeah,
and your words there are not.
Are you thinking that there's no morality, that the group has no morality influence on the individuals in the group?
No, morality, the relationships are, I mean, that it's formed in relationship, but a difference that I see is that I cannot make you moral by simply telling you to do something. You have to choose one.
Even if all those
so moral choices,
yeah,
individual choice is moral.
It could be moral legislation.
Yeah.
But moral legislation arises out of moral individuals. It doesn't make moral individuals.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think it's a dialogue.
Yeah, always,
I think
well, it's a dialogue.
It does impact. Moral legislation, you know, it does have an impact on the individual.
Right.
If you go into a group where you have lots of sharing, that person can fit into that a lot more easily. The person goes into another group where there's no sharing at all. That's going to have impact on that person. So the sharing of the goods, even if it's coerced, can have a positive morality impact on the individuals in that group.
Unless
the person is
totally
immune to influence, it's going to affect them. So it's going to have some impact on them.
By that same token, though, you could say that the Americans, if they were all given, quote unquote, their property, and then out of guilt, out of sheer guilt, ended up distributing it, that would be a moral choice.
I don't quite understand. I don't understand the relevance of what I was saying on that.
For me, the really importance of this debate back and forth is in the fact that it's the idea is that these parcels have come. They were not expected by anybody, the Americans or anybody else in the camp. and you can make an analogy between the unexpected spiritual and sort of God's gracious blessing, you know, which just comes, and it's not expected, but it comes. And then the question is, what do you do with it, and how do you use it? How do you decide, and for whom is it used? And it seems to me this argument, this debate is really very relevant to the whole question of the United States right now in its capacity as a wealthy first world nation living in a world of great objective human need. And what is the relationship between our position as Americans in this land of plenty and promise and the rest of the world?
I think that had relevance when it was written or when it actually happened too.
Oh, yeah,
he brings that point up. He says precisely that this is a microcosmic dealing with wealth that is now the case for the planet as a whole.
What you're saying there, when I was saying there has to be some dialectic between the community and the individual, from my own personal experiences, I don't trust the judgment of an individual left out of the context of community.
I wouldn't support.
I'm not saying you are. I think Grant probably is. I don't see much community context in what he's saying. He's saying each individual should have the right to decide. I know when I get a package at the post office, I don't open it there because I'm afraid it might have chocolate chip cookies and then I have to share with everybody. And I want to take it back to my room and then decide if I want to share and how much. That's how I do it. You know, as much as that disgusts me, that's how I do it. And I keep thinking, you know.